Where did I leave off? The soldier with the green whiskers led them through the streets of the Emerald City until they reached the room where the guard in the gates lived. I know my stomach's going to rumble. This officer unlocked their spectacles and put them back in the great box, and then he politely opened the gate for our friends. "Which road leads to the Wicked Witch of the West?" asked Dorothy.
"There is no road," answered the guardian of the gates. "No one ever wishes to go that way."
"How, then, are we to find her?" inquired the girl.
"That will be easy," replied the man. "For when she knows you are in the country of the Winkies, she will find you and make you all her slaves."
"Perhaps not," said the Scarecrow, "for we mean to destroy her."
"Oh, that is different," said the guardian of the gates. "No one has ever destroyed her before, so I naturally thought she would make slaves of you, as she has had all the rest. But take care, for she is wicked and fierce, and may not allow you to destroy her. Keep to the west, where the sun sets, and you cannot fail to find her."
They thanked him and bade him goodbye, and they turned towards the west, walking over fields of soft grass dotted here and there with daisies and buttercups. Dorothy still wore the pretty silk dress that she had put on in the palace, but now, to her surprise, she found it no longer green, but pure white. The ribbon around Toto's neck had also lost its green color, and was as white as Dorothy's dress. The Emerald City was soon left far behind, and as they advanced, the ground became rougher and hillier, for there were no farms nor houses in the country of the West, and the ground was untilled. In the afternoon, the sun shone hot in their faces, for there were no trees to offer them shade, so that before night, Dorothy and Toto and the lion were tired and lay down upon the grass and fell asleep, with the woodman and the scarecrow keeping watch. Now, the Wicked Witch of the West had but one eye, yet it was as powerful as a telescope and could see everywhere. So, as she sat in the door of her castle, she happened to look around and saw Dorothy lying asleep with her friends all about her. They were a long distance off, but the Wicked Witch was angry to find them in her country, so she blew upon a silver whistle that hung around her neck. At once there came running to her from all directions a pack of great wolves. They had long legs and fierce eyes and sharp teeth. A new voice.
"Go to these people," said the witch, "and tear them to pieces."
"Are you not going to make them your slaves?" asked the leader of the wolves.
"No," she answered. "One is of tin and one of straw. One is a girl and another a lion. None of them is fit to work. You may tear them into small pieces."
"Very well," said the wolf, as he dashed away at full speed, followed by the others. It was lucky that the scarecrow and the woodman were wide awake, and they heard the wolves coming. "This is my fight," said the woodman, "so get behind me, and I will meet them as they come." He seized his axe, which he had made very sharp, and as the leader of the wolves came on, the tin woodman swung his arm and chopped the wolf's head from its body, so that it immediately died. As soon as he could raise his axe, another wolf came up and also fell under the sharp edge of the tin woodman's weapon. There were 40 wolves, and 40 times a wolf was killed, so that at last they all lay dead in a heap before the woodsman. Then he put down his axe and sat beside the scarecrow, who said, "It was a good fight, friend." They waited until Dorothy awoke the next morning. The little girl was quite frightened when she saw the great pile of shaggy wolves, but the tin woodman had told her all. She thanked them for saving them and sat down to breakfast, after which they started again upon their journey. Now, the same morning, the Wicked Witch came to the door of her castle and looked out with her one eye that could see far off. She saw her wolves lying dead and the stranger still traveling through her country. This made her angrier than before, and she blew her silver whistle twice. Straight away, a great flock of wild crows came flying towards her, enough to darken the sky. And the Wicked Witch said to the King Crow, "Fly at once to the strangers, peck out their eyes, and tear them to pieces." The wild crows flew in one great flock towards Dorothy and her companions. When the little girl saw them coming, she was afraid. But the Scarecrow said, "This is my battle. Lay down beside me, and you will not be harmed." So they all lay upon the ground except the Scarecrow. And he stood up and stretched out his arms. And when the crows saw him, they were frightened, as these birds always are by scarecrows, and did not dare to come any nearer. But then the King Crow said, "It is only a stuffed man. I will peck his eyes out." I don't know what a crow sounds like. Sorry. The King Crow flew at the Scarecrow, who caught it by the head and twisted its neck until it died. And then another crow flew at him, and the Scarecrow twisted its neck also. There were 40 crows, and 40 times the Scarecrow twisted a neck until at last all were lying dead beside him. Then he called upon his companions to rise, and again they went upon their journey. When the wicked Lich looked out again and saw all her crows lying in a heap, she got into a terrible rage and blew 3 times upon her silver whistle. Forthwith, there was a great buzzing in the air, and a swarm of black bees came flying towards her. "Go to the strangers and sting them to death," commanded the witch, and the bees turned and flew off rapidly until they came to where Dorothy and her friends were walking. But the woodman had seen them coming, and the Scarecrow decided what to do. "Take out my straw and scatter it all over the little girl and the dog and the lion," he said to the woodman, "and the bees cannot sting them." This the woodman did, and as Dorothy lay close beside the lion and held Toto in her arms, the straw covered them entirely. The bees came and found no one but the woodman to sting, so they flew at him and broke off all of their stingers against the tin, without hurting the woodman at all. And as bees cannot live when their stings are broken, that was the end of the black bees, and they lay scattered thick about the woodman, like little heaps of fine coal. Then Dorothy and the lion got up, and the girl helped the Tin Woodman put the straw back into the Scarecrow again until he was as good as ever. So they started upon their journey once more. The Wicked Witch was so angry when she saw her black bees in little heaps like fine coal that she stamped her foot and tore her hair and gnashed her teeth. And then she called a dozen of her slaves, who were the Winkies, and they gave them sharp spears, telling them to go to the strangers and destroy them. Now, the Winkies were not a brave people, but they had to do as they were told, so they marched away until they came near to Dorothy. Then the lion gave a great roar and sprang towards them, and the poor Winkies were so frightened that they ran back as fast as they could. When they returned to the castle, the Wicked Witch beat them well with a strap and then sent them back to their work, after which she sat down to think about what she should do next. She could not understand how all her plans to destroy the strangers had failed, but she was a powerful witch, as well as a wicked one, and she soon made up her mind how to act. There was, in her cupboard, a golden cap with a circle of diamonds and rubies running round it. This golden cap had a charm. Whoever owned it could call 3 times upon the winged monkeys, who would then obey any order they were given. But no person could command these strange creatures more than 3 times. Twice already, the Wicked Witch had used the charm of the cap. Once, when she had made the Winkies her slaves and set herself to rule over their country, the winged monkeys had helped her do this. The second time was when she had fought against the Great Oz himself and driven him out of the land of the West. And the winged monkeys had also helped her in doing this. Only once more could she use this golden cap, for which reason she did not like to do so until all her other powers were exhausted. But now that her fierce wolves and her wild crows and her stinging bees were gone, and her slaves had been scared away by the cowardly lion, she saw there was only one way left to destroy Dorothy and her friends. "You know, it's funny. My dog will sit down here next to me all night long and not make a noise. The second I start to read, she starts to snore way over there. Somebody's getting some sleep out of this." So the Wicked Witch took the golden cap from her cupboard and placed it upon her head. Then she stood upon her left foot and said slowly, "Epi, peppy, khaki." Then she stood upon her right foot and said, Hilo, holo, hello. After this, she stood upon both feet and cried in a loud voice, Zizzy, Zuzzy, Zick. Not exactly scary, is it? Now the charm began to work. The sky was darkened, and a low rumbling sound was heard in the air. There was a rushing of many wings, a great chattering and laughing, and the sun came out of a dark spot to show the wicked witch surrounded by a crowd of monkeys, each with a pair of immense and powerful wings on his shoulders. One, much bigger than the others, seemed to be their leader. He flew close to the witch and said, "You have called us for the third and last time. What do you command?"
"Go to the strangers who are within my land and destroy them all except the lion," said the wicked witch. "Bring that beast to me, for I have a mind to harness him like a horse and make him work."
"Your commands shall be obeyed," said the leader, and then, with a great deal of chattering and noise, the winged monkeys flew away to the place where Dorothy and her friends were walking. Some of the monkeys seized the Tin Woodman and carried him through the air until they were over a country thickly covered with sharp rocks. Here they dropped the poor woodman, who fell a great distance to the rocks, where he lay so battered and dented that he could neither move nor groan. Others of the monkeys caught the Scarecrow, and with their long fingers pulled all the straw out of his clothes and head. They made his hat and boots and clothes into a small bundle and then threw it into the top branches of a tall tree. The remaining monkeys threw pieces of stout rope around the lion and wound many coils about his body and head and legs until he was unable to bite or scratch or struggle in any way. Then they lifted him up and flew away with him to the witch's castle, where he was placed in a small yard with a high iron fence around it so that he could not escape. But Dorothy, they did not harm at all. She stood with Toto in her arms, watching the sad fate of her comrades, and thinking it would soon be her turn. The leader of the winged monkeys flew up to her, his long, hairy arms stretched out, and his ugly face grinning terribly. But he saw the mark of the good witch's kiss upon her forehead and stopped short, motioning the others not to touch her. "We dare not harm this little girl," he said to them. "For she is protected by the power of good, and that is greater than the power of evil. All we can do is carry her to the castle of the Wicked Witch and leave her there." So, carefully and gently, they lifted Dorothy in their arms and carried her swiftly through the air until they came to the castle, where they set her down upon the front doorstep. Then the leader said to the witch, "We have obeyed you as far as we are able. The Tin Woodman and the Scarecrow are destroyed, and the lion is tied up in your yard. The little girl we dare not harm, nor the dog she carries in her arms. Your power over our band is now ended. You will never see us again." Then all winged monkeys, with much laughing and chattering and noise, flew into the air and were soon out of sight. The Wicked Witch was both surprised and worried when she saw the mark on Dorothy's forehead, for she knew well that neither the winged monkey nor she herself dare hurt the girl in any way. She looked down at Dorothy's feet, and seeing the silver shoes, began to tremble with fear, for she knew what a powerful charm belonged to them. At first the witch was tempted to run away from Dorothy, but she happened to look into the child's eyes and saw how simple the soul behind them was, and that the little girl did not know the wonderful power the silver shoes gave her. So the Wicked Witch laughed to herself and thought, "I can still make her my slave, for she does not know how to use her power." Then she said to Dorothy, harshly and severely, "Come with me and see that you mind everything I tell you, for if you do not, I will make an end out of you, as I did the Tin Woodman and the Scarecrow." Dorothy followed her through many of the beautiful rooms in her castle until they came to the kitchen, where the witch bade her clean the pots and kettles and sweep the floor and keep the fire fed with wood. Dorothy went to work meekly, her mind made up to work as hard as she could, for she was glad the wicked witch had decided not to kill her.
With Dorothy hard at work, the witch thought she would go into the courtyard and harness the cowardly lion like a horse. It would amuse her, she was sure, to make him draw her chariot whenever she wished to go on a drive. But as she opened the gate, the lion gave a loud roar and bounded at her so fiercely that the witch was afraid and ran out and shut the gate behind. "If I cannot harness you," said the witch to the lion, speaking through the bars of the gate, "I can starve you. You shall have nothing to eat until you do as I wish." So after that, she took no food to the imprisoned lion, but every day she came to the gate at noon and asked, "Are you ready to be harnessed like a horse?" And the lion would not answer. I'm sorry, and the lion would answer. That was the lion's voice. "No, if you come in this yard, I will bite you." The reason the lion did not have to do as the witch wished was because every night when the woman was asleep, Dorothy carried him food from the cupboard. After he'd eaten, he would lie down on his bed of straw, and Dorothy would lie beside him and put her head in his soft, shaggy mane while they talked over their troubles and tried to plan some way to escape. But they could find no way to get out of the castle, for it was constantly guarded by the Yellow Winkies, who were the slaves of the Wicked Witch and too afraid of her to not do as she told them. The girl had to work hard during the day, and often the witch threatened to beat her with the same old umbrella that she always carried in her hand. But in truth, she dare not strike Dorothy because of the mark upon her forehead. The child didn't know this, and was full of fear for herself and Toto. Once, the witch struck Toto a blow with her umbrella, and the brave little dog flew at her and bit her in return. The witch did not bleed where she was bitten, for she was so wicked, the blood in her had dried up so many years before. Dorothy's life became very sad as she grew to understand that it would be harder than ever to get back to Kansas and Aunt Em again. Sometimes she would cry bitterly for hours, with Toto sitting on her feet and pardon me, with Toto sitting on her feet and looking into her face, whining dismally to show how sorry he was for his little mistress. Toto did not really care whether he was in Kansas or the Land of Oz, so long as Dorothy was with him. But he knew the little girl was unhappy, and that made him unhappy too. Now, the Wicked Witch had a great longing to have her own... I'm really screwing this up today. Now, the Wicked Witch had a great longing to have for her own the silver shoes which the girl always wore. Her bees and her crows and her wolves were all lying in heaps and drying up, and she had used up the power of the golden cap. But if she could only get a hold of the silver shoes, they would give her more power than all of the other things she had lost. She watched Dorothy carefully to see if she ever took off her shoes, thinking she might steal them. But the child was so proud of her pretty shoes that she never took them off except at night and when she took her bath. The witch was much too afraid of the dark to dare go into Dorothy's room at night to take the shoes, and her dread of water was greater than even her fear of the dark, so she never came near Dorothy when Dorothy was bathing. Indeed, the old witch never touched water, nor let water touch her in any way. But the wicked creature was very cunning, and she finally thought of a trick that would give her what she wanted. She placed a bar of iron in the middle of the kitchen floor, and then, by her magic arts, made the iron invisible to the human eye, so that when Dorothy walked across the floor, she stumbled over the bar, not being able to see it, and fell at full length. She was not much hurt, but in her fall, one of the silver shoes came off, and before she could reach it, the witch snatched it away and put it on her own skinny foot. The wicked one was greatly pleased with the success of her trick, for as long as she had one of the shoes, she owned half the power of their charm, and Dorothy could not use it against her, even if she had known how to do so. The little girl, seeing she had lost one of her pretty shoes, grew angry and said to the witch, "Give me back my shoe." "I will not," retorted the witch, "for it is now my shoe and not yours." "You are a wicked creature," cried Dorothy. "You have no right to take my shoe from me." "I shall keep it just the same," said the witch, laughing at her. "And someday I'll get the other one from you, too." This made Dorothy very angry. She picked up the bucket of water that stood near and dashed it over the witch, wetting her from head to foot. Instantly, the wicked woman gave a loud cry of fear. And then, as Dorothy looked at her in wonder, the witch began to shrink and fall away.
"See what you've done," she screamed. "In a minute, I shall melt away."
"I am very sorry indeed," said Dorothy, who was truly frightened to see the witch actually melting away like brown sugar before her very eyes.
"Didn't you know water would be the end of me?"
asked the witch in a wailing, despairing voice.
"No, of course not," answered Dorothy. "How should I?" "Well, in a few minutes, I shall be all melted, and you will have this castle to yourself. Oh, I have been wicked in my day, but I never thought a little girl like you would ever be able to melt me and end my wicked deeds. Look out, here I go."
With these words, the witch fell down in a brown, melted, shapeless mass and began to spread over the clean boards of the kitchen floor. Seeing that she'd really melted away to nothing, Dorothy drew another bucket of water and threw it over the mess. She then swept it out the door. After picking out the silver shoe, which was all that was left of the old woman, she cleaned and dried it with a cloth and put it on her foot again. Then, being at last free to do as she chose, she ran into the courtyard to tell the line that the Wicked Witch of the West had come to an end and that they were no longer prisoners in a strange land. What do you say? Should we do one more?
Yeah,
I think we got one more. The Cowardly Lion was much pleased to hear that the Wicked Witch had been melted by a bucket of water and that Dorothy at once unlocked the gate of his prison and set him free. They went in together to the castle, where Dorothy's first act was to call all the Winkies together and tell them that they were no longer slaves. There was a great rejoicing amongst the other Winkies, for they had been made to work hard during many years for the Wicked Witch, who had always treated them with great cruelty. They kept this day as a holiday, then and ever after, and spent the time in feasting and dancing.
"If our friends the Scarecrow and the Tin Woodman were only with us," said the Lion, "I would be happy."
"Don't you suppose we could rescue them?" "Don't you suppose we could rescue them?" asked the girl anxiously.
"We could try."
So they called the other Winkies, and they asked them if they would help rescue their friends. And the Winkies said they would be delighted to do all in their power for Dorothy, who would set them free from bondage. So she chose a number of Winkies who looked as if they knew the most, and they all started away. They traveled that day and part of the next until they came to the rocky plain where the Tin Woodman lay, battered and bent. His axe was near him, but the blade was rusted and the handle broken off short. The Winkies lifted him tenderly in their arms and carried him back to the Yellow Castle again. Dorothy, shedding a few tears by the way of the sad plight of her old friend, and the Lion looking sober and sorry. When they reached the castle, Dorothy said to the Winkies, "Are any of your people tinsmiths?"
"Oh, yes. Some of us are good tinsmiths," they told her.
"Then bring them to me," she said. And when the tinsmiths came, bringing with them all their tools and baskets, she inquired, "Can you straighten out those dents in the Tin Woodman and bend him in the shape again and solder him together where he is broken?" The tinsmiths looked at the woodman ever carefully and then answered that they thought they could mend him so that he would be as good as ever. So they set to work in one of the big yellow rooms of the castle and worked for 3 days and 4 nights, hammering and twisting and bending and soldering and polishing and pounding at the legs and the body and the head of the Tin Woodman, until at last he was straightened out into his old form, and his joints worked as well as ever. To be sure, there were several patches on him, but the tinsmiths did a good job, and as the woodman was not a vain man, he did not mind those patches at all. When at last he walked into Dorothy's room and thanked her for rescuing him, he was so pleased that he wept tears of joy, and Dorothy had to wipe every tear carefully from his face with her apron so that his joints wouldn't be rusted. At the same time, her own tears fell thick and fast at the joy of meeting her old friend again, and these tears did not need to be wiped away. As for the Lion,
He wiped his eyes so often with the tip of his tail that it became quite wet. He was obliged to go out into the courtyard and hold it in the sun until it dried. My goodness, I'm really doing poor here. If we only had the scarecrow with us again, said the Tin Woodman. When Dorothy had finished telling him everything had happened, I should be quite happy.
We must try to find him, said the girl.
She called the Winkies to help her, and they walked all that day and part of the next until they came to a tall tree in the branches of which the winged monkeys had tossed the scarecrow's clothes. It was a very tall tree, and the trunk was so smooth that no one could climb it. But the woodman said at once, I'll chop it down, and then we can get the scarecrow's clothes. Now, while the tinsmiths had been at work mending the woodman himself, another of the Winkies, who was a goldsmith, had made an axe handle of solid gold and fitted it to the woodman's axe, instead of the old broken handle. Others polished the blade until all the rust was removed and it glistened like burnished silver. As soon as he had spoken, the Tin Woodman began to chop, and in a short time the tree fell over with a crash. When the scarecrow's clothes fell out of the branches and rolled off on the ground. Dorothy picked them up and had the Winkies carry them back to the castle, where they were stuffed with nice, clean straw. And behold, here was the scarecrow, as good as ever, thanking them over and over and over again for saving him. Now they were reunited. Dorothy and her friends spent a few happy days at the Yellow Castle, where they found everything they needed to make them comfortable. But one day, the girl thought of Aunt Em and said, "We must go back to Oz and claim his promise." "Yes," said the woodman. "At last I shall get my heart."
"And I shall get my brains," added the scarecrow.
"And I shall get my courage," said the lion.
"And I shall get back to Kansas," cried Dorothy joyfully. "Oh, yes, let us start for Emerald City tomorrow."
This they decided to do. The next day they called the Winkies together and they bade them goodbye. The Winkies were sorry to have them go, as they had grown so fond of the Tin Woodman that they begged him to stay and rule over them in the Yellow Land of the West. Finding they were determined to go, the Winkies gave Toto and the Lion each a golden collar, and to Dorothy they presented a beautiful bracelet studded with diamonds, and to the Scarecrow they gave a gold-headed walking stick to keep him from stumbling. And to the Tin Woodman they offered a silver oil can inlaid with gold and set with jewels. Every one of the travelers made the Winkies a pretty speech in return, and they all shook hands with them until their arms ached. Dorothy went to the witch's cupboard to fill her basket with food for the journey, and there she saw the golden cap. She tried it on her own head, found that it fitted her exactly. She did not know anything about the charm of the golden cap, but she saw that it was so pretty, so she made up her mind to wear it and carry her sunbonnet in the basket. Thus, being prepared for the journey, they all started for the Emerald City, and the Winkies gave them 3 cheers and many good wishes to carry with them. I think that's the end of tonight's section. Looks like we've got another 2 or 3 nights left here. So hopefully we will all pick back up tomorrow. Thank you. Sleep well.